Well, we've got a jam-packed episode of Talk Central for you this week. In the show, we're talking about Peter Ace's departure from Vodacom, the new Gauteng television station, Telkom DSL hikes, new banking apps, and much more. So stay tuned.
Switchboard. Why, hey, Sunshine. Let me transfer you. Please hold. Switchboard. Why, I'm just Peachy. Thanks for asking. Please hold. Switchboard. Oh, dang. He's just stepped out of his office. Can I transfer you? Please hold.
Bill! It's your wife!
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX for your business available from only 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by South Africa's technology news leader at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod, and as always, I'm here with Craig Wilson. Hi, Craig.
Hi, Duncan.
So, lots to talk about this week. I think the big news that broke yesterday was the resignation of Peter Ace, the CEO of Vodacom.
Yes, something we sort of saw coming, but we're told wasn't, and then the bomb got dropped after all.
Yes, indeed. We actually heard back in May that Peter was leaving and that Shameel Yusub, who's currently the CEO of Vodafone, would be taking over. Strong denials from Vodacom back in May when we first picked up this information. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get a second source to confirm the information that we had, so we decided not to run it at the time. But our primary source on the story turned out to be right, and Peter has resigned. He's leaving at the end of March next year, so there's going to be a lengthy handover period with Shameel, who was the former MD of Vodacom South Africa and also a former MD of the Vodacom service provider company, coming back to South Africa on the 1st of September for a 7-month handover period.
Indeed, after a long run in heading up the operation in Spain.
Yeah, he actually wasn't there that long. He only started there, I think, on the 1st of April 2011.
Oh, that's true, right? It hasn't even...
So it's been, 15 or 16 months that he's been there, and he will have been there for a year and a half when he comes back to South Africa, so he certainly hasn't been gone long. And one wonders if Vodafone sent him over there with the view of taking over the helm at Vodacom eventually.
Perhaps as a sort of grooming job, yeah.
Get some international experience at the head of an operator.
Absolutely. And generally, you know, we spoke to a lot of analysts yesterday on their take on this, and both men very highly regarded. You know, Ace has been with Vodacom for almost 20 years now.
Yeah,
he's been at the helm for about four, if I'm right.
He's been the CEO for 4 years. That's right. I think it'll be coming up for 5 years when he leaves. He was one of the first employees. Worked hand in hand with Alan Knott Craig, the founding CEO of Vodacom, to build the network. I remember reading a great little story in Alan Knott Craig's book, the title of which escapes me for the moment. But stories about him and about Knott Craig and Peter Ace driving around together in Joburg and other parts of the country with
testing coverage
and phoning engineers and demanding towers get put up, etc., etc. In those heady early days of mobile in South Africa. So he's he certainly is the face of Vodacom. Of course, his successor Shameel Yusub has been there since apart from his brief stint in Spain, has been at Vodacom for a similar amount of time. I think he joined shortly after Vodacom launched commercial services. I think, if I remember correctly, he started in March or April 2004. Mm. Obviously, Vodacom first switched on its network for testing purposes around 2003, and I think launched commercially early in 2004. So he knows the business backwards as well.
So not 2004, sure.
Oh, yeah, of course,
1994.
Long time ago. Back in the...
So I betray my youth, but I was still at school in those days. Okay. So I remember it. I remember the novelty of parents having cell phones,
yes.
These huge brick-like things, you know, the Nokia 2110s and the like.
Yes. Yeah, I still remember my first cell phone. I think it was called Siemens C3, if I'm not mistaken. The battery lasted about 4 hours.
And it broke your butler's back.
That wasn't too bad, but it had a tiny little orange screen. There was no touch phones back in those days.
Sure, sort of three-line LCD display.
No, it was a one-line LCD.
A one-line.
One-line orange LCD display.
Oh, and now you betray your age then.
Yes. loved that phone though, even though it only had a 4 or 5 hour battery life. It's amazing to think how far we've come from those old Siemens and Nokia phones to today, where we're using iPhones and Galaxy S3s.
Which, of course, some people joke about the battery life having gone back to those sorts of levels now.
Yes.
we had a wonderful phase where phones lasted for days, but now we're back to back to having to charge them at least once a day.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. So, yeah, all change at Vodacom. And I think Shamil is certainly coming into a changing market. It's a market that's becoming more competitive in no small part thanks to what Alan Knock-Craig, the former Vodacom CEO, is doing at Cell C.
Indeed.
Bringing in aggressive tariffs and the sort of reaction I think you got yesterday from some of the analysts you spoke to, Craig, was that Vodacom may have to react to these price changes, and it's going to be interesting to see how Shamil handles a highly price competitive market and what impact that has over the next few years on Vodacom's margins and profits.
Indeed, and I think it's going to be really interesting to see in coming months when we actually get some concrete figures out of Cell C as to what sort of movement they're seeing, you know, how many people they are actually seeing porting to the service. In the wake of these announcements and these special offers and sort of driving down the price, you know, it'll be interesting to see how many people do actually move, because much like you know, banking a few years ago, one of the things that operators for a long time have had in their favor is that a lot of people see the task of moving between networks as a real sort of schlep, even if, you know, now that number portability is possible, and obviously wasn't in the early days, but even though you can keep your number, a lot of people are reluctant to do it. It just seems like a lot of effort. And if they can, you know, if Cell C can convince people that it's worth going to the trouble of actually going through the process of porting, I'm just interested to see how many people they actually manage to attract.
Yeah, we are, as you say, we should have a clearer figure. Unfortunately, the number portability company doesn't publish the numbers. It's the operators hold that data quite tightly. Although the information has leaked in the past, we published a story last year about the number portability figures. So hopefully we can get a leak again and get a proper look at what those numbers are looking like.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know about you, but in my just in sort of casual experience, I'm noticing more frequently when I phone people, I'm hearing those
beep beep beep,
those three beeps that tell you they've been ported.
Yes.
You know, people of course hearing it with me now too, because I've recently ported. I think, you know, you've got to follow the cheapest deals.
Yeah, indeed. But while we're talking about Cell C, I had a fascinating interview, I think it was about a week and a half ago now, with Alan Knock-Craig, talking about a range of things. But one of the more interesting aspects that came out of it was a new Cell C head office that's now, I believe they've started construction of it, on it this week.
It's sort of Buccleuch Interchange area.
Buccleuch Interchange, just north of Sandton. If you know the area, if you know where Oracle's offices are, it's on the same north side, but directly across the N1. If you know where Top TV is, it's diagonally across the Buccleuch Interchange from there. It's an open piece of land at the moment, and it's going to be a huge head office. I forget the exact size now, but it's going to be big, and they're going to take their call center and all the disparate offices they've got around Johannesburg and Parktown, Sandton, all over the place at the moment, and put them all in one place and build a customer service center as well, and a mall where people can go and buy phones and stuff. It's almost sounds like Knock-Craig is rebuilding VodaWorld.
Indeed, a second time around, and just further up the drag or down the drag, depending which way you look at it.
Yeah, indeed. And I asked him, you know, why that's what particularly, and interesting point. He said that while it's at the convergence of all these highways, there's a huge amount of traffic going through there all the time, and they're going to take advantage of that to really punt the Cell C brand, put up billboards and all sorts of stuff. So
that makes sense.
The Buccleuch Interchange is going to become the Cell C Interchange when that new office block is completed, that new office campus is completed.
And we're getting to the point with Midrand growing as big as it is, that sort of area and those surrounds, you know, Woodmead and the like, you don't have to be in Sandton anymore.
No. Yeah. I mean, I know that Alan Knock-Craig lives in Pretoria, so it must be an absolute nightmare for him to try to get into the central Sandton every morning and leave there every evening.
Although we hope that there are bigger plans afoot than merely trying to save his morning commute. No,
true. I'm sure it played a factor, though.
It would be fascinating to see the infrastructure that gets put in place to support this building, too.
Well, it's part of that whole waterfall development that's happening. It's owned by an Islamic family. I forget their name. But that whole area between Buccleuch and Midrand is now going to be developed. They're going to be shopping malls. They're going to be mixed-use housing and business office estates, etc.
I've even heard of plans to build another university and all sorts of things.
Okay.
Really just sinking whole money into that area, yeah.
It's one of the last sort of open bits of felt between Johannesburg and Pretoria that's going to now be developed.
Indeed.
In fact, I think it may be the very last one. If you go along that highway, I can't actually think of any open bits anymore.
Any more major gaps? There are a couple of small ones.
A little bit around Samran still, but even that is closing up pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so
Yeah, it'll be a few years before we see the end of that, I imagine.
It's going to take a while to build up.
But we'll keep an eye on it.
I think that it's the end of next year that Celsi's hoping to move in there.
Right.
I think he said December 2013, if I remember correctly. But if you commute through the area and you see all the construction going on, it's the home of Celsi's new head office. So, Craig, moving on, let's talk a bit about broadcasting.
I'd say you've changed tack a little to the new broadcaster, the new hopeful.
New hopeful. I find it a bit strange that they've chosen satellite to launch this platform. It's a free-to-air service that's going to service Gauteng only, appropriately named Gauteng, or GauTV rather. What is the holding company? It's Mzansi
Community Satellite TV.
Community Satellite TV. It's a community broadcaster. It's run by a non-profit organization. Craig, you spoke to the lawyer representing Mzansi/GauTV. What are they planning to do?
Well, firstly, the sort of holding company's name excuse me, itself is problematic. They may run into some opposition on that. The Mzansi portion of it is what's creating the trouble because, of course, there's an Mzansi Magic television station on DSTV. And they may be able to get around it by simply trading as GauTV. But
I was at the ICASA hearings this week, public hearings into GauTV submission or application for license, and they said that they'd changed their name to GauTV, the operating company, because I got the impression that they were going to call themselves Mzansi, but they've decided to call themselves GauTV because MultiChoice complained about or lodged a submission to the hearings, ahead of the hearings,
right.
We're saying that
is fine. Understandable.
I mean, it's understandable. I mean,
I think GauTV is arguably a better name. It's more descriptive and more applicable, really, to exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's very curious. You know, I'm not quite clear on what the motivation for it is. The argument is that they want to provide community programming, very, very localized, regional, sort of focused programming, sports and everything, you know, entertainment, dramas. But preferably only local content. So aside from buying a lot of local content, they're also looking to help fund and produce a great deal of local content from independent producers and so on to sort of fill the station. At launch, they're planning to have one 24-hour station, and then they're looking to expand that to additional stations further down the line. But the you know, this all sounds very good on paper, but my concern is, as a satellite service, there's going to be installation fees. You know, you're going to need hardware to pick it up, including a set-top box / you know, decoder. They said it will be encrypted, and they'll be using GPS, I gather, to
they're going to use a GPS locator unit which will be installed on the satellite dish to ensure that the service is not watched by anyone outside of Gauteng.
Indeed, so if you take the equipment outside of Gauteng, it won't work. But as a free-to-air, it's still going to require people who want the service to invest in hardware. And this seems a little bit optimistic, really. It's very difficult to get people to, particularly at first, for one station. I mean, unless the quality of the content is astounding, I find it hard to fathom how people would spend a few hundred rand on, or more, you know, on a dish and a decoder set-top box for a single free station. You know, if it was a bouquet and you
were sort of a once-off,
you know, at launch. Even as it grows, for I'm not sure that I would pay a few hundred rand for two or three stations, you know, and invest in actual hardware. But I suppose we'll wait and see. It's going to be interesting too from a ICASA perspective because it's a little bit precedent setting, I gather. I don't think ICASA's had this sort of application before. Mm. And I mean, good luck to them. I think, you know, more competition in the broadcast space is good. It just seems there's all sorts of questions that remain to be answered about the plan and the business plan and just how they're going to make this viable.
Let's see how they do it. Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a fairly costly operation because they're only going to carry local content. There's going to be no international content.
Mm, exactly.
And they want to run a news operation, which is probably the most expensive thing you can do in television broadcasting.
Mm, absolutely.
They're going to set up regional studio hubs or I presume studios in micro studios in four different locations across Gauteng, one in Pretoria, one in Sedibeng, which is sort of the southern parts around Vereeniging.
One for Ekurhuleni.
There's one for Ekurhuleni on the east rand and then one in Krugersdorp, Mogale City on the west rand.
Right.
They've
also spoken a lot about covering sporting events in the region, everything from, you know, hockey to basketball to whatever.
Yes.
And that's also costly.
Yeah.
If you're going to go and do live broadcasts from these sort of events.
It sounds quite exciting, but I think the big challenge here is digital terrestrial television is coming, and that's going to offer a huge bouquet of services, free-to-air services, to South African viewers. And you make the right point, Craig. You know, if you can get 20 or 25 free-to-air channels on terrestrial television in the next year or two, will you really stump up a cash to install a satellite dish and a decoder, set-top box, to watch one channel?
Mm. Mm.
But we shall be watching them with interest, and good luck to them. Let's talk. What are we talking about next? Cape Town. They're getting tough on people who talk on their phones and send text messages while driving. I personally think it's a good thing, although I have been guilty of this myself in the past.
The problem is, I think we're both in favour, even though we've certainly been guilty of it.
I mean, when I stop at a red robot, the first thing I do is have a quick check on my mail, see what's going on, and I know I shouldn't do it. They're cracking down in Cape Town. There have been conflicting reports about the size of the fine. An initial SARPA and Cape Times report suggested it was going to be 5,000 Rand. Other reports have suggested 500 Rand. I understand now that the 500 Rand is for first infringement, and it will go up to 5,000 Rand over time for repeat infringements. But perhaps the more contentious thing around this is that they'll confiscate your phone for 24 hours, and you'll have to go and collect it at a central police station.
And it'll supposedly be, you'll be given a receipt, and it'll be locked away, and then you can retrieve it after the 24-hour period has elapsed. I see a great uproar coming over this, particularly because... the police service at the best of times doesn't exactly have the most fantastic reputation with South African citizens. And I see citizens being very upset at the prospect of having to hand over their smartphone for a day.
Yeah. And worrying about getting lost in the system.
Indeed, yes. Worrying about it conveniently disappearing.
Yeah. I don't know what the reputation of the Metropolitan Police is in Cape Town. Maybe perhaps it's different to the Metro Police in Joburg. But that would be concerning. But in principle, I actually can't find myself opposing this.
The sort of fines. I think the punitive, let's slap people with fines and actually discourage them from using their phones. You know, I mean, I'm sure we've all seen all sorts of madness on the roads. I saw a guy yesterday change lanes accidentally because he was trying to cradle his phone and look at some paperwork while on the N1 highway. So I think this is good. But if you're going to slap someone with a fine, I don't see any need to confiscate the device. Really, you're creating additional admin, both for the police and for citizens. You know, then you have to go and find the time the next day to go to the police station or the central police station to retrieve it. I feel like the fine is a sufficiently punitive measure. I just feel the confiscation, I understand some of the motivation, I suppose, you know, and they really want to discourage you, but it's just so inconvenient. And really, we're not trying to keep people away from their offices and, wasting time in queues at police stations. We're trying to discourage them from using handsets. And if we've agreed that the fine is the way to do that, I'm not sure that this additional measure is necessary.
Mm.
Particularly because of the burden on police, just in terms of paperwork and admin of having to look after this. It just seems a massive waste of resources when we could just write a fine and get on with it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right there. Yeah, it's interesting. It's amazing some of the stuff you see in the traffic. I mean, I was stuck on, a couple of months ago, I was stuck on it was the M1 North just before the Buccleuch interchange in that late afternoon traffic where it doesn't move. Looked across at the car next to me and the guy was sitting in the driver's seat reading the Star newspaper.
Right. Oh, I've seen this. Yes, I've seen this many times. I saw a guy reading the Business Day last week.
I suppose anyway to pass the time. But
I think really the word is audiobooks. This is the solution.
Audiobooks, yeah. the worst I ever saw was some Kugel in Victory Park. She had a poodle on her lap. She was doing her lipstick and talking on the phone.
All at once.
But anyway.
We'll wait and see. We'll also see whether these fines make their way to other provinces. I suppose they'll use Cape Town will be an interesting sort of testing ground.
And it'll be fascinating to see what impact this has on car accident rates in Cape Town.
Indeed. Although I also wonder how seriously people will take it. You know, in the same way that officially there's a 500 Rand fine for talking on your cell phone. It clearly hasn't discouraged people from our day-to-day experiences.
No, true.
You know, I make an effort to carry a sort of pair of headphones to plug into the phone for these sorts of instances. But, there are tons of times, you know, pretty much everyone I know takes a call at some point.
Mm.
So clearly that fine hasn't worked to really discourage people. You wonder whether this will be any better.
True. Right. Banking apps. We're really jumping around from telecoms to broadcasting to banking to...
Oh, sorry. There's a big link to cell phones, right? Cell phones, banking apps. This is all right.
True. So there's been some development there. Nedbank has released an app only to its staff at this stage. They say it's going to go to general release in August.
That's right. Beginning of August.
And then very quietly, Standard Bank released a final version app into various smartphone marketplaces. When was it? About a week and a half ago now. The reports we're hearing, I'm not a Standard Bank customer, you're not a Standard Bank customer, Craig.
But not anymore,
from,
no.
From people who are using it, they seem to say it's pretty good.
Indeed. Mm. I find it very strange that Standard Bank's been so quiet about it. I wonder if perhaps they're just letting it sort of trickle out and making sure that all the bugs are ironed out before they...
Well, they did put out a press release, but it was after the news broke.
It feels like their hand might have been forced by the news breaking. Yeah,
yeah. It amazes me that these companies develop apps and then aren't ready to release a statement the moment they get accepted in the app stores, because they get submitted. You probably have to wait a few weeks for Apple or whoever to take a look at it.
Indeed.
And you never know when it's going to appear. So have your ducks in a row. Get ready to announce it as soon as it appears there.
And have someone checking every morning to see if it has shown up.
Yeah.
I'm hearing good things about the Standard Bank app. As I said, I haven't actually had a chance to use it hands on. I'm waiting for the next function I go to where someone has it on their phone and I can fiddle a little. But Nedbank's as well, great that there is one, but I wonder about the decision to announce it and release it to staff rather than simply announcing it when it's ready to go for consumers.
My guess is they got wind of the Standard Bank one.
Absolutely, and wanted to be able to say second to market, right?
Mm.
I haven't seen the Nedbank app either. I did know someone who worked there who spoke quite highly of it, but I wanted to, try it hands-on again.
Yeah.
I mean, really, the thing with the apps is there are just certain things we expect them to do, and if they do them, well, then this is great. The Nedbank, what they're trying to differentiate from, say, the FNBs and the Standard Banks, is Nedbank are saying that it'll be possible for those who have share trading accounts with Nedbank to actually... manage these and trade using the app, which no one else does yet. But otherwise, really, what do we expect our apps to do? We want to be able to do once-off payments. We want to pay beneficiaries, add beneficiaries, transfer between accounts, buy prepaid. Really, the functionality is pretty standard across the board. There are just certain things that people want out of apps.
Yes.
What's going to be interesting is what they can add, if anything, to them to actually make them stand out.
Mm, like FNB's geo payments facility.
Absolutely, exactly. And Nedbank's argument for share trading. These are the little things that might perhaps make a difference to some people. I mean, we've been very impressed with the geo payments functionality. We've actually used it quite a lot.
Mm.
These are exactly the sort of things that set them apart. But it is still astounding to my mind that the banks have taken this long to respond. I mean, FNB, if you consider FNB's app, has been out for going on a year and a half now, I think.
Yeah.
It's about 18 months.
Yeah.
It seems staggering that it's taken this long to for anyone to respond.
Or perhaps the other banks didn't feel it was necessary initially to respond.
What's interesting is what's changed their mind. Has it been the customers moving, or what's driven the decision? Or is it just a case of, well, this is inevitable and we best get on this wagon?
Yeah. Of course, there's one big red bank that hasn't got an app yet, and we don't know when it's coming.
No, there has been talk of it.
We know it is coming.
We know it's been in development for quite some time already.
Yeah.
It seems good. Obviously, it's also particularly glaring because said big red bank is also the biggest bank in the country. They've got more
customers
than anybody else on the retail front.
Yeah.
And really, that's the market that you want to be chasing with the app, even if... Granted, I'm sure the vast majority of their users aren't necessarily ready to use a smartphone application. I think what we'll see from them is that they'll release an app in conjunction with a sort of overhaul of mobile banking generally, so that whether you're using an entry-level device or a smartphone, there'll be added functionality for users across the board.
Yeah.
And I think that's how they're going to try and couch it when it's eventually released, as a, well, look, we support everybody.
Yes. Yes.
But unfortunately, there is a long delay. It should be out by now.
It should be. And I think these apps are important because they appeal to higher net worth individuals, I think. And those are exactly the customers the banks need to be attracting.
I think there's that. And they also appeal to aspirational, or the aspirations of customers. There are customers who perhaps at the moment
don't have a
smartphone, but would like to have one and intend to have one in coming years. And they, I think they like the idea of being with a bank that can support this, even if they're not ready for it now. There is a large element of this sort of forward thinking and aspiration certainly plays into it.
Yeah. Good. Craig, let's get on to our picks of the week. What have you got this week?
Mine has to be Chrome for iOS. It's long overdue. I know you've been playing with Chrome on Android for some time now.
And on my iPad.
And on your iPad. And, the original Google, quite a while ago, released Google Search for iPad and iPhone. And that was very good, but it wasn't really a browser. You know, it only allowed you to search for one item at a time. And it was a very nice interface. You could slide in, slide a search result page to a quarter of the page while you looked at something and then come back and then look at a further search item. And it was quite good. The only problem was you couldn't do tab browsing, you couldn't do bookmarks, and it just wasn't a fully fledged browser. Mm. Now, of course, Chrome, meanwhile, is everything we could have hoped, or just about. I've been using it a bit on iPad and iPhone because I've been a Chrome desktop user since pretty early after it came out, actually. I remember using it and friends who were Firefox devotees mocking me about it. Mm-hmm. But I really liked Chrome's... it's just so stripped down. It's so, bare bones. I like the simplicity of it. And what you've got now is all of your sort of usage syncing across devices.
Yeah, that's great.
And that's, I think, the best feature. You know, I can look at something on my desktop and then go home or go wherever and open it on my iPad and pull up exactly the same tabs that I was looking at on the desktop and vice versa. And it's this, it's this integration across platforms that is really the greatest value of these sort of apps. As I think you said to me in a tweet about this when it came out, one wonders if Steve Jobs is spinning in his grave at the back of this, that they've finally allowed it in. But also, I suppose they have no choice.
Apparently it's based on the Safari engine, though, so it's not true Chrome.
Sure.
But still, it
that was the one looks, missing bit I was
it,
thinking
it,
of.
It yeah. looks and feels like Chrome and works really well. And I'm on my iPad, I'm certainly never going back to that crummy Safari browser.
Well, exactly. Yeah. It just makes Safari look antiquated and inadequate. Mm. And it's got all the functionality, even the sort of incognito browsing windows. It's just got
Has it got Google Translate built into it if you go to a foreign language website?
I will check.
That's worth knowing, actually. I've been finding that quite useful just in the last few days, researching Shamil Yusuf and his performance at Vodafone in Spain.
Because your Spanish is a little rusty, is it?
My Spanish, I don't think I even know a single word in Spanish. you're reading articles in El País, if that's how you pronounce the newspaper. You just hit translate, and it's not perfect, but you can get an idea of what the piece is about. Craig, my pick this week is the Staircinecore app for Android, which is currently only available on the Samsung store. I believe it's coming to more general release on Android soon. But a really cool app. I know the Staircinecore website is often criticized for its rather excessive use of Flash.
To put it mildly, I think that site has got to be on the shortlist of most loathed consumer websites in South Africa.
That's true.
No one I know speaks well of it. Most people, I have a number of friends who deliberately use the mobile site even on desktops.
Okay.
Only because it's just so much more stable and pared down. And that site is terrible.
But the Android app rocks. Right. It really rocks. It's brilliant. You go in there, you select your cinema, you can get details of movies. It's really image driven, so you can see the full made primary image of the movie. You can then say book a seat, select the day and time.
Select the actual seat in the cinema.
You can select the seat in the cinema, see which seats have already been booked, see what type of seat you're getting. Mm. So you want one of these new luxury couches that they're offering in some of their theatres.
Or a love seat.
Or a love seat. That was the term I was looking for. And then you can book on your phone, right? Like that. I think it's brilliant. It's a really cool...
Do you then just go and swipe the card that you used to pay when you get to the venue?
I presume so. I haven't actually booked...
Oh, I'm sure it's the same. I'm sure it's the same as the site.
Yeah. As the site, yeah. But a really good job done by Staircinecore.
And I think the important thing here, too, is for a lot of people, certainly users like us, if we've got the option of the app, then I'm less critical of the website for some reason. I'm not going to use it.
Yeah.
As I said to you earlier, I'm not a big fan of FNB's online banking website. I don't think it's the best banking website I've seen. but the app is so good that it doesn't matter because I almost never use it.
Yes.
I think this is a great move from StokeInicore, and you know, I fiddled around with it a little bit on your phone, and it's really good. It's just really clean and everything you need, and it's a little bit flashy still, not flash based, but you know, looks quite snazzy, but functionality seems great, and that's what we want. To answer your earlier question, I've just checked, and there doesn't seem to be Translate built into Chrome, but that may well come in future releases. Okay. In the meantime, I'm just going to have to work on my Spanish.
Indeed. Good. I think we're almost out of time there. Just before we wrap up, we've got some DVDs to give away this week, courtesy of Ronnie Aptecker, who was involved or was a key figure in the movie Material, starring Dr. Riyad Musa, the comedian and doctor. And we've got hundreds of entries for that giveaway. And these are the lucky winners in no particular order. We've got Babs Govender from Pretoria East. Shelly Gurr, I think that's how you pronounce your surname, from Amanzim Toti, south of Durban. We've got David Majorca from Yeovil. Welton Malgas, I think it's pronounced, from Southfield in Cape Town. And the fifth DVD goes to Lawrence Sligting of Ilovo in Johannesburg. Some unusual names there. Good, and I apologize if I've mispronounced any of those.
And those will be sent out shortly.
Those will be sent by New Metro Distribution, and you should receive them in the next few weeks.
Fantastic.
Great. That's all the time we have for this week from Craig Wilson and myself, Duncan McLeod. Thanks for listening. And as always, if you've got any feedback on the show, you can send us an email. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, cheers.